from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would just as soon sit here and wax enthusiastic, wax anthemic even, about how beautiful it is in Southern California right after it rains. It's amazing here. What were those little white holes in the sky last night? Those were interesting. But I have, unfortunately, that's not my job. My job is not to wax poetic or even anthemic. My job is to, at this particular point, I'm going to issue an invective against, now you know a lot of right-wing radio commentators are always hurling invectives against the nanny state. Today, ladies and gentlemen, I hurl an invective against the nanny car. Not a person named Nanny Car. Don't get ahead of me or, even worse, behind me. And I am loath to discuss my personal experiences here on the broadcast because I always, whenever I do, I get emails from people saying, please stop whining about your personal life. Please stop using your precious public radio time to whine about your personal life. And we know, don't we? There's so little whining about personal lives on public radio.
Don't we?
Anyway, my battery died. No, you don't have to send a card. It's fine. I mean, it's not fine. I'm fine. My battery died, so I took my three-and-a-half-year-old car, I'll tell you what kind later, in to have the, or I had my car taken in, to have the battery fixed. And then I get a call. The battery fixed. What am I talking about? To have the battery replaced. Then I get a call. What's your radio code? Now I'm thinking this is Dan Rather on the line, because that's the kind of a question, you know, what's the frequency? What's your radio code? Okay, I'll play along. I don't know. What is that? You know, for the anti-theft thing on your radio, it has to be... Why would that... Well, when we disconnect the battery, the radio now thinks it's being stolen. Oh, it does it? I have no idea. Okay, fine. So they try a couple of codes. The Volvo people... I said the name. Try a couple of codes, and they call me back. No, it's neither of those. I said, well, was this tattooed on my thigh at birth? Where would I know this code? You would have had a little card that came with your manual. Okay, card. I'll look up my fine collection of cards. I look up. There it is, my little card collection, and there's my code. And I give them the four numbers, and they say, no, that's the first one we tried. What do you mean? That's my code. Yeah, it's not your code. But it's on my card. It's not your code. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, we try it a third time, and the radio just shuts itself down and just now refuses to. Oh, as an anti-theft device, you see. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do? We're faxing Sweden, ladies and gentlemen. I am in the fourth day of awaiting the return fax from Sweden with my code. Now, see, I'm the kind of cuss that feels that when the police tow your car just because you've parked, they think, illegally, that's theft. It's just legalized theft. Just, you know, the guys with the badges and the guns have stolen your car instead of the guys with the guns. Similarly, here are the good people at Volvo helping me to prevent my car radio from being stolen. And how do they do it? As far as I can tell, they've stolen my radio. Hello, welcome to the show.
I've been riding down and round the block. Haven't taken notice to any clock. The sun's gone down and it's almost dark. Looking for a place to park. An officer told me to come on past. Why, the next thing happened, I was out of gas. He said, you can't stop over here. I've been looking for a place to park.
My cash was low, I didn't know where to go. I fell on down to a gasoline station. My sweetie said, come on, baby, let's go. I said, mama, won't you have a little patience? We kept riding round the block. Didn't notice any clock. Well, the sun was down, really dark. Looking for a place to park. Yeah.
It's been dark and I can't see. You still remain a mystery. A voice inside a memory. The head of someone sleeping. But every time the rain comes down, I wait until it clears. Rain the stories in your head. Waiting for your moment. Getting longer now. The nights are getting warmer too. I'll take you where the wild things are, just around the corner. We'll listen to the midnight hum and gather up our fears. Playing the stories in your head, waiting for your moment.
shines at midnight 'neath the starry sky. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Strolling with the one girl, sighing sigh after sigh. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Just imagine someone waiting at the cottage door, where two hearts become one. Who could ask for anything more? Loving one who loves you, and then taking that vow. Nice work if you can get it, and if you get it, won't you tell me how? Nice work if you can get it. Nice work if you can get it. The man who only lives for making money lives a life that isn't necessarily sunny. Likewise, the man who works for fame, there's no guarantee that time won't erase his name. The only work that really brings enjoyment is the kind that is for girl and boy meant. Fall in love, you won't regret it. That's the best kind of work if you can get it. Midnight, 'neath the starry sky. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Strolling with the one girl, sighing sigh after sigh. Nice work if you can get it. Nice work if you can get it. And if you get it, won't you tell me how?
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome. Hey, you, ladies and gentlemen, where would you say the axis of smallpox is? We've heard about the axis of evil. The axis of smallpox, who has smallpox? Hands? No, what nations have stockpiles of smallpox? Iraq? North Korea? Russia? And France? How about that? In that while, that became public this week as a result of a Bush administration intelligence review. That was just a pause for the Democrats to make the obvious joke. Two officials who received classified briefings told the Washington Post that Iraq and North Korea, Russia, and France have covert stockpiles of the smallpox pathogen. Iraq and France are assessed to have smallpox with high but not very high confidence. I guess that means ability to make sure that it spreads. U.S. officials said the French program is believed to be defensive in nature. Some of them expressed consternation about its inclusion in the this report and that it was disclosed to a reporter, since the Bush administration, Colin Powell particularly, has been finessing the French to get that 15-0 vote in the Security Council this week. You don't want to tick off the French right now. You don't mind ticking off some Brits, though. The gala showing of controversial U.S. director Larry Clark's latest film was abruptly withdrawn from the London Film Festival last night after the director tried to strangle his British distributor. Man, do I know the feeling. The movie Ken Park was removed from its gala slot after Clark physically assaulted Hamish McAlpin of the London-based Metro Tartan Distribution Group. The fight, during which punches were thrown and which ended with Clark overturning a table, happened during a dinner at the Charlotte Street Hotel in London Thursday night and was prompted by a disagreement over reactions to 9/11. In the aftermath of the fight, Clark, best known for discovering actress Chloe Sevigny, was held at a police station for 4 hours. McAlpin was treated for his injuries. Clark is 59 years old. McAlpin is 47. The tail of the tape doesn't reveal any other comparative statistics. Clark said, "I'd never ordinarily fight someone. It's not in my nature. To take it out of my film is just absurd." McAlpin said he'd offered to stick with the film if Clark left the United Kingdom. Clark, this is now in the words of the London Observer, Clark, who was renowned for his brutal directorial vision, has been described variously as a child pornographer and a genius. That's various, all right. That's some variosity. That's some serious variosity. Also on the British beat, a bishop who protested to the Broadcasting Standards Commission, their version of RFCC, I guess, after being addressed by his Christian name on a radio program, has had his complaint upheld. The Taste and Decency Watchdog. Doesn't that sound quaint? No, not a Taste and Decency Watchdog. Just Taste and Decency. The Taste and Decency Watchdog ruled that Bishop Sean Manchester, oops, I did it, was treated unjustly and unfairly by phone-in presenter James Whale, spelled like the beast. Manchester, a bishop in the traditionalist Old Catholic Church, appeared live on Whale's late-night discussion program on radio station TalkSport last February. He was discussing exorcism, still practiced by many Christian churches. Manchester, who is the Bishop of Glastonbury, home of a famous rock festival, he got his work cut out for him, said he reminded TalkSport staff prior to joining the program that the correct forms of address for someone of his standing were Bishop or Bishop Manchester. The advice was not taken. Whale, a shock jock known to stir up on-air controversy, subjected Manchester to a tirade of discourtesy, according to the complaint, repeatedly failing to refer to him properly, according to the bishop. In spite of this, the bishop stayed on the show for half an hour. The watchdog declined to uphold a further complaint from Bishop Manchester that the host threatened to slap him after their disagreement. Man, it's getting bad over there. It ruled, did the watchdog, that since the conversation took place by phone, no such threat could be taken seriously. I'm going to slap you, caller. A spokesman for the radio station was unrepentant. This complaint seems to have been a complete waste of public money. Protests of this sort should not be taken seriously. The Old Catholic Church, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, broke away from the Roman Catholic Church 150 years ago in disagreement with the determination of the First Vatican Council that the Pope was infallible. Its members still celebrate the Mass in Latin and insist on not being called by their Christian. It's a Christian name. Isn't that ironic? Ladies and gentlemen, talk about irony. A suspect in the terrorist attack on a Bali disco told his interrogators that the group that carried out the blast intended to attack Americans and regretted that instead they killed many Australians, according to the head of the investigation. The Australians were, I was down there right after the Bali attack, and they were at once shocked that their position at the corner of the world, outside the ken of most folks and sort of in a safe little corner, had been rudely jolted by this terrorist attack. And yet, they felt, all right, now we've been called to the main stage. So here's the terrorist, one of the terrorists saying, no, it was a mistake. We weren't aiming at you. Sorry, Oz. Repentant, but not apologetic. Apologies come next. Meantime, also below the fold, where you might not have noticed it, a panel of three senior British judges used extraordinary language in a ruling this week to criticize the United States detention of prisoners from Afghanistan at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. The three judges ruling in a case involving a British subject held at Gitmo said detention of prisoners at the United States naval base there appeared to be a violation of both international law, so what? And the concept of habeas corpus developed centuries ago in England. Habeas what? The judges said the holding of prisoners at Guantanamo with no recourse to a court created an unacceptable legal black hole, they acknowledged, they couldn't do anything about it. So that really is a black hole. That is, boy. If British judges can't do anything about it, I mean, they can slap the wrist of a guy who called a breakaway bishop Sean. They can't do anything about this. That is a black hole. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
No, these aren't regrets. These are apologies. Remarks made by a veteran teacher to a classroom of fourth graders about shooting pupils who made mistakes on their music lessons have triggered a controversy at an elementary school in suburban Chicago. The teacher, Lois Emmerich, was removed from the classroom for a week while investigators investigated the incident. Administrators investigated the incident, or investigators administrated the incident. According to several parents, Emmerich told fourth graders October 21st that if they played their recorders, their musical instruments, incorrectly, she would shoot them. She pointed to a mark on the floor and said it was blood from another pupil. She also pointed to a closet and said she kept the bodies of other children who'd been shot in there, according to parents. Parents found out about the remarks from their children. School officials in Emmerich do not dispute the remarks were made, though Emmerich says she cannot remember her exact words. Some pupils told their parents they thought the remarks were intended as a joke. Many parents failed to see the humor. That sounds like parents. One even contacted police and filed a report. Emmerich, who's set to retire in February after 25 years of teaching, said she often uses jokes to interest the pupils and that she never intended her words to be construed as a threat. Granted, in today's times, she said, I shouldn't have said it. I do regret the incident. Oh. That's regrets. That's not really an apology. All right, let's get to the apologies. WAMU in Washington. The Kojo Namdi Show shocked listeners when Namdi's interview on Dreams and Nightmares with neurologist Richard Sitowick was interrupted by a breaking news report of fatal shootings in Montgomery County. Around 34 minutes into his noon broadcast, Namdi was heard urgently introducing WAMU reporters Lisa Nurnberger and James Jones with the latest on the most recent sniper victims and an announcement of a live news conference by law enforcement authorities. That was this past week. The report was part of a rebroadcast of Namdi's October 3rd show, continued for about 3 minutes until station managers, alerted by scores of disturbed listeners, realized their mistake and pulled it off the air. We heard from a lot of people who were understandably very upset, WAMU program director Mark McDonald told the Washington Post. What can I say? We were horrified here. We launched an immediate investigation, and now we have a system in place that gives us assurances this won't happen again. An abject apology was read twice on the air and posted on the station's website, signed by General Manager Susan Clampett. The genesis of the trouble came when Namdi called in sick, suffering from bad allergies, requiring an overworked producer to choose a program for rebroadcast on short notice. Quote, people at the station are so unused to the idea I would call in sick, it caused a problem, the host said. Isn't that the radio station that dumped Le Show on September 10th, saying, yes, it was. Wasn't that the same program? Yes, it was. Apropos of last week's apology by the candidate with the prostate problem, apologizing for urinating on the lawn of a potential voter who took down his sign, an emailer says that article, Michael from Florida, says that article missed the two funniest points. First, the candidate was the local TV weatherman for about 20 years. His campaign sign showed him standing by a TV screen-shaped background urging you to vote for him because, quote, you know him. And there was the headline in the online version of the Tallahassee Democrat article on the subject, which read, weather forecast, golden showers. Right, move on then. Thirty-five conservative members of parliament who refused to support their leader's hard line on gay adoption have received an apology from the party leadership for having branded them as rebels. In a rare move, David McLean, the Tory chief whip, has written to the MPs who abstained in Monday's vote on the adoption and children bill to tell them they did nothing wrong. The aim was to heal the wounds inflicted by the conservative leader's attack on his rebel MPs when he made a plea to unite or die. His target was the 8 members of his party who voted against the bill. Many of the abstainers believed he was also accusing them of disloyalty. Opposition parties are basically sorry anyway at this point. For the second time in a general election, Pinellas County, Florida, election supervisor Deborah Clark is having to explain errors by her office that cast doubt on the outcome of a close race. An election worker mislabeled machines at 5 mid-county precincts, causing 633 voters to receive the wrong ballots. "I'm very, very sorry this happened," Clark said. "This is my responsibility." She's already made changes to ensure the problem will not recur. From now on, she said, more than one person will check the machines to make sure they're properly marked. Hey, that's a good plan. Redundancy. And Boston, Roman Catholic Cardinal Bernard Law has made his most candid apology. I like that categorization. Here now, ladies and gentlemen, my most candid apology. If you'd like to go back in time, check out some of my less candid apologies. They're fun, too. His most candid apology, I say, for assigning sexually abusive priests to parishes where they continue to have access to children. Law, for the first time, acknowledged this week that, had he acted differently, some children might not have been sexually abused by priests. "I did assign priests who had committed sexual abuse," the cardinal, in a sometimes emotional talk, told some 150 parishioners at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross. "I acknowledge my own responsibility for decisions which led to intense suffering. While that suffering was never intended, it could have been avoided had I acted differently." Law has apologized in the past, but this was the most detailed offered by the cardinal since the scandal erupted in January. "Once again, I want to acknowledge publicly my responsibility for decisions which I now see were clearly wrong," Law said. He said he was speaking out more forcefully at the request of a group of alleged victims of the late Reverend Joseph Birmingham. He's accused, it is Birmingham, in civil lawsuits of molesting more than 50 boys over 3 decades. Law has repeatedly refused to resign despite admitting covering up for abusive priests. So, his most... You can't get more candid, ladies and gentlemen, than your most candid apology yet. Although there might, that suggests there are more candid apologies to come. So hopes are high. And finally, at the top of the week, let me bring you up to date on the status of digital television. This isn't me talking. Well, I mean, this is me talking, but the words I'm about to speak to you are from Wired magazine. They like technology over there. Quote, "The future of digital television remains fuzzy. Even with the Republicans now set to control both Congress and the White House, the only foreseeable change in the arduous transition to digital TV is a new Senate committee chairman. John McCain will take over the reins of the Commerce, Science, and Transport Committee, which oversees legislation related to digital TV. In 1998, as you know, Congress mandated the TV broadcaster switch from analog to digital. I'm quoting now. Which promises viewers crystal clear pictures and a windfall of interactive capabilities in their TV sets. Congress wants to sell the broadcaster's analog airwaves licenses to wireless service providers and stick the proceeds in the government coffers. Consumers want the right to record movies in their homes. They also don't want their current TV sets and VCRs to become obsolete in this transition to a digital world. Hollywood is reluctant to provide digital programs unless there's a provision to keep TV viewers from unlawfully copying movies and shows. The broadcast networks want cable TV providers to carry their local digital broadcasts. All this. To the chagrin of legislators, there's always one group that tries to shoot down a digital TV bill and proposals intended to speed up the transition. The consumer electronics industry wants no government regulation at all. How weird. They want the market to dictate it. Politicians want the money that would come from an auction of the analog airwaves. They also want to appease the broadcasters, a lobbying powerhouse to reckon with in Washington. However, they certainly don't want constituents' TVs to cease working by 2006. If you wake up one morning and your TV set goes black, says Jerry Cuffold, an analyst with a market research firm, that is not politically acceptable to anybody. Unquote. How long has it taken them to reach that conclusion? It was in the bill. It was in the law that was passed in 1998, turning off analog TV. It was politically acceptable then. This consultant now says, quote, I don't think we will ever see analog channels completely turned off. There will be a substantial amount of people who own a 100% analog TV set and flat out can't afford to buy a new one. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just been given permission not to buy one. The new Senate Committee Chairman McCain appears to hold the same view. He's skeptical that the analog broadcasters are going to give the spectrum over to the government, as they agreed to do in 1998, says his spokesman Pia Pialorsi. Pia Pialorsi. I just want to fixate on that name. In other words, he doesn't see digital TV becoming ubiquitous anytime soon. He doesn't think there's a snowball's chance that Arizona broadcasters will give the spectrum back. So, ladies and gentlemen, have a happy Christmas. Buy yourself an analog TV. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show, and the pollsters, they got chickens on, forget eggs, they got chickens on their faces. This was not a good election cycle for America's pollsters, which is, I guess, a good cycle for the rest of us. You know me, I've been saying for years, just don't cooperate with him. When you cast your vote, for one thing, don't let him know what you voted as you leave the polling place. Don't participate with the exit polls. Well, something happened because there were no exit polls this year. At least not yet. The Voter News Service, which is the consortium set up by the networks, decided, no, doesn't work, thank you. We blew it, says John Zogby, a well-known pollster, about a last-minute poll on the governor's race in Illinois, which said GOP candidate Jim Ryan was ahead. Ryan lost big. Many other political pollsters lost big as well, according to the Wall Street Journal. The reasons may be as various as the recent popularity of caller ID and cell phones, which hamper efforts to reach voters, and the nation's increasing ethnic diversity, which makes it harder to get an accurate sampling of the electorate. Zogby says the polling industry is at a crossroads. May I suggest taking it back to the garage? Declining cooperation, one of the biggest stumbling blocks. Declining cooperation from people who simply don't want to be bothered. Ladies and gentlemen, join the crowd. Don't want to be bothered. Forget about don't know. Don't want to be bothered. They never list that. They will. People are tired of calls from telemarketers. Accurate polling is more difficult since racial and ethnic groups tend to have distinctive voting patterns. And now there's so many groups coming in. So the pollsters, ladies and gentlemen, they lost. And, of course, the Democrats lost in most areas of the country, although they reelected a governor in California. And a couple of senators, but not what they expected, not at all. And now, of course, the recriminations begin and continue.
Clinton something, the Harlem years.
Now I want to say right here at the top that I'm pleased all of you fellas can make time in your busy schedules to come on up to 125th Street tonight.
Well, Bill, you know, su casa es mi casa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was just doing some crossfire promos anyway, sir, and frankly, it was a relief to get out of that boxing ring set. You know, Novak was really starting to punch me hard.
Yeah.
Mr. President, of course, this neighborhood is familiar territory to the whole Jackson clan.
Uh-huh.
Although I have to say, I've been up here since they opened the old Navy store. Have you seen the customer base in there? They put the tail in retail. They put the gumption back in consumption. They put the purr back in purchasing.
Okay, I don't have on that. Look, I thought we all should gather because, except for Tom Daschle and Terry McAuliffe, we're really the leadership core of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, don't that give you the screaming shakes?
Well, actually, as a matter of fact, no. It's better than us handing the reins over to Dick Gebhardt.
Yeah, can you believe it? He resigns from a House leadership that failed to get back the House mm-hmm. so he can run for president on a platform of what? Failure?
Mr. Vice President, failure in a good cause is sometimes better than success in a bad one.
Yeah, well, maybe for you, Jesse. For me, it sucks like... like turning 50 and not having my third million.
Well, you keep turning up your nose at Alka-Seltzer commercials, and you'll be not having it all the way to the bank.
Okay, fellas, we gotta figure out what the hell we can do to salvage this party of ours. I mean, you know, I thought I'd left a legacy of a more united, more confident, more competent Democratic Party. And 2 years down the line, that legacy is junk down the sink. Now, I don't think our purpose here tonight is finger-pointing, but I guess before we go forward, we do have to answer John Lennon's question. Who was the walrus?
Yeah, well, Mr. President, maybe I'm talking out of turn here because, you know, now I'm used to having a little voice in my ear tell me when it is my turn. But I tell you, it's as plain as a Cajun beauty queen. The walrus was Paul.
Paul?
Yeah, Wellstone. He doesn't die. They don't hold that extreme funeral rally in his honor. Mondale doesn't run. People don't see us as desperate and old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now let's take the road not traveled. If that memorial service had been properly churchified and sanctified, it could have been pandemonious and sanctimonious. Yeah. It could have been political and exuberant, and nobody would have dared say the merest boo.
All right, look, I think we didn't devote enough resources to taking Florida back, because we win in Florida, the country says. You know, maybe they really did win Florida the last time, too. That eats into Bush's legitimacy, and boom, we've got an opening when people are ready to listen to us, when they start to see him as a poser and a fake.
Al, excuse me for vituperating here, but, you know, people wanted an election, not a grudge match. And your idea leading the party was to give one speech about the war, spend one night in Florida, and I guess devote the rest of your time to writing your damn memoirs.
James, let's move on.
Yeah.
If Al, you know, takes longer to get over some things, that's his business. But,
you know,
but what I...
You know, working people have a choice on election night. They can turn out, or they can turn in. We didn't give people of color and near color a reason to go to the polls. Our people in Congress voted for Bush's war and Bush's tax cut. And only when working people voted with their checkbooks did our folks stand up to Bush's Homeland Security power grab. Oh,
Jesse, letting Bush beat us over the head for storming on the Homeland Security Department that we forced on him in the first place was the dumbest thing we've done in this party since...
Don't say it.
What?
Letting Corinna run my campaign.
I don't think that's where it was going.
Oh, good.
Gentlemen, we cannot be a Me Too, D2 party. We cannot let the voiceless continue to be without a voice.
Yeah, well, isn't that what makes them voiceless? Hey, listen, I'm sorry. Stop, you know, stop staring at me like I'm Al Sharpton's hairnet or something.
Guys, there's nothing wrong with this party that can't be cured by a good spokesman. You know, without a lead singer, the best band in the world is just another Fish spinoff. Now, obviously, I can help in certain selected precincts and certain selected states. Okay, I guess nobody's going to correct me on that. Al, you seem reluctant to don the mantle of spokesmanship.
Oh, look, I'm just one of those who feel that if winning the popular vote doesn't entitle you to be president, it surely doesn't make you the titular head of your party.
That's exactly what it does do.
Well, maybe in your universe, James.
Look, a spokesperson is only a messenger. If the party has the right message, even Walter Mondale can deliver it.
Yeah, that's another thing. Next time we got to round up last-minute candidates, why don't we get some people under 70? I mean, even a gator wouldn't bite what we threw in the water. Yeah, we can oppose Bush on Iraq, give the Republicans another 20 years to run against us as soft on the enemy. That'll be fun.
James, you saying with him on foreign policy, against him on economic and domestic?
Yeah. It's called Cold War politics, and it's back. That's Mr. Karl Rove's gift to the nation.
Man, I wish we hadn't gotten wagged the dogged when we went into Bosnia and Kosovo. We could have painted the Republicans as soft on...
Soft on what? Humanitarian aid to the Albanians?
Well,
so if we're supposed to oppose him on the economy, who's going to get up and call for a healing, an end to the double dealing, a repealing of the tax cuts?
Well, only the congresspeople in the safest districts.
They're exactly the people the Republicans want to see as our spokespeople. Your Nancy Pelosi's, your Barney Franks, your Henry Waxman's. Look, I hate to say it because it makes me seem like an I told you so, but the place to attack Bush is where he's the weakest, on the environment.
Yeah, well, that's great in 1992, Mr. Vice President, but in rough economic times like these, a dirty job beats a clean beach every time.
Okay, look, time to assert some leadership. I believe in my heart of hearts that only dinner can help us cut this Gordian knot. Let's suspend for a while. I'm calling Popeyes.
Thank you.
angst, and middle-aged powerlessness. Together, they add up to Clinton something, the Harlem Years.
Your sunny side up, up, hide the side that gets blue. If you have 9 suns in a row, baseball teams make money, you know. Keep your funny side way, way up. Let laughter ring through. Do stand upon your legs, be like 2 fried eggs. Keep your sunny side up, way up.
Keep your sunny side up, up. Hide the side that gets blue. If you have 9 suns in a row, baseball teams make money, you know.
Keep your funny side up, up. Let your laughter ring through. Do stand upon your legs, be like 2 fried eggs. Keep your sunny side up. Your funny side up, up. Let your laughter come through. Do stand upon your legs. Be like 2 fried eggs. Stand upon your legs. Be like 2 fried eggs. Keep your sunny side up.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've been remiss in not pointing out what I do believe is the quote of the year, particularly since it's been spoken in almost identical terms by 2 different spokespeople for 2 different celebrities. So it really deserves a little bit more attention. First, of course, Madonna, whose latest motion picture, Swept Away, has in fact been swept away. It will not be released in Great Britain after its somewhat disastrous release in the United States. And you don't even have to punch a British distributor to get it to not be released there. That's before the punching. It opened, I think, about a month ago, made $300,000 on its opening weekend. That, in Hollywood terms, is called, ladies and gentlemen, a bad opening. It's not an anatomical term. That's a term of art. And on the Monday following that weekend, this is a movie directed by her husband, Guy Ritchie, by the way. On the weekend following that opening, Madonna's PR lady, Liz Rosenberg, said, addressing the critics, "Stop being so mean. Give the girl a break." Across the continent, a Miami-Dade County judge this week briefly issued a bench warrant for O.J. Simpson, stemming from his failure to pay a citation for speeding through a manatee zone in his powerboat on the 4th of July. The action came after neither Simpson nor his attorney, Yale Galanter, were present when their case was called. The judge gave them several hours to show up. They failed to do it. Galanter told the AP his law firm hadn't received a notice of the hearing. By mid-afternoon, Galanter had contacted the judge, who set aside the bench warrant and rescheduled the hearing for November 22nd. Ed Griffith, a spokesman for the state attorney's office, said the civil matter had escalated into something more serious because Simpson failed to pay the ticket issued by a Florida Fish and Wildlife officer. He didn't pay the ticket and then failed to appear before a traffic magistrate, Griffith said. The matter was then brought to our office, and he was charged with second-degree misdemeanor for failure to pay a citation. Simpson chose to plead innocent last month instead of paying a $65 fine for the charge stemming from a July 4th speeding in waters near downtown Miami. Behind the wheel of a boat, he was ticketed for creating a wake in a manatee zone, the equivalent of a speeding ticket. He pleaded innocent last month, but that was 5 days after he was issued an affidavit of noncompliance for failing to appear for an arraignment. Point here is that when he was issued the ticket in the first place, Yale Galanter, Simpson's attorney, said of O.J., "Can't this guy get a break?"
Yeah, yo, yeah, yo, yeah, yo. Hey, Maddie.
You want to do this thing?
What the hell? We're here.
My movie just tanked.
They say that it stank.
What do you expect them to say?
Oh, you know what? They're jealous of you.
So what else is new?
They're ticked off that you won't go away.
So you got busted again.
Yeah, so I ain't gentle Ben. And the cops are still gunning for me.
You know what? They wish they was you.
You know what? That's true. Because I still look good on TV.
Mistake.
You give and you take. They won't give you a break.
Come on, come on, come on.
The tables will turn.
We'll live and they'll learn. And one day they'll give us a break. Why can't we get a break?
Come on, come on, come on.
That's supposed to be some big thing.
No, but the truth is I dared.
Yeah, nobody cared when you couldn't dance and couldn't sing.
There it is.
You know, people believe.
What they're going to believe, no matter whatever I say.
That's right. You were probably tracking down the real killers on your boat.
Mm-hmm.
And the manatees just got in your way.
I heard that.
Run it.
The price is too high.
When you live in the sky, people say, let them eat cake.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.
But sure as the storm,
we need love to stay warm. Why can't we get a break?
A break.
Why can't we get a break?
Like the Liberty Bell.
Like the boy in the bubble.
Like the lens on the Hubble.
Like the children of Burma.
Like this chick named Irma. We both have one case to make.
Come on, come on, come on.
You've been letting us slide for so f***ing long. So why can't we get a break? Why can't we get a break?
Ladies and gentlemen, just to remind you that I wasn't telling that story at the beginning of the broadcast to impugn a fine vehicle or to whine about my personal life in a public radio forum, but just to alert you that you probably want to study up on your radio code right about now. And with that timely warning, that will conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week from New York City at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, all up and down the east coast of North America via shortwave radio on WBCQ The Planet 7.415 megahertz, and around the planet Earth on your computer via the internet whenever you want it at two different locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be it'd be just like the Democrats apologizing for screwing up so badly if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. I don't think we're on the air. I know we're not on the air in Boston, and I don't think we're on the air in Providence, but if you're planning to head that way, middle of this month, my very independent comedy film, speaking of fistfights, Teddy Bear's Picnic, will be playing in both Providence, Rhode Island, and Boston, Massachusetts. Y'all come! The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. We'll see you. No, you'll hear me next week.